Hi guys. So yeah, I'm Felix. I work for Ethereum Foundation. I'm one of the maintainers of Go Ethereum, and I'm also the maintainer of the DefP2P specifications. So in this talk, I'm just gonna, you know, talk about things that happened around DefP2P in 2018. So yeah, I get to answer this question every year. So what's DefP2P? Well, it's a peer-to-peer networking stack. And it's a system that Ethereum nodes use to talk to each other over the network. So, and it has all the things that P2P networking stacks usually have. So it has a system for finding nodes on the internet, and it has an encrypted transport protocol that you even heard about a bit earlier. It's not the best, but it does have one, and this is the protocol that the nodes actually use once they are exchanging data. And I think the important thing to know about DefP2P mostly is that it's an integrated networking stack, so all the components work together in a predefined way. And this is great because it means that the system has certain properties that we can rely on, and it's actually much easier to evaluate the security this way. Because if you know how exactly this stuff is going to be used, then it's easy to reason about. So there are around 10 implementations of DefP2P right now. So you can see them listed here. Most of the DefP2P implementations are part of some kind of Ethereum blockchain client, but it's not all blockchains. So there are some implementations that are incomplete, or they're just a library that implement a certain part of it. And DefP2P isn't just used for the blockchain, it's also used by other projects like the Swarm distributed file system. Most of the offshoots of the Swarm file system also use it. And even the Status Messenger app used it for a long time, but I'm not sure whether they're still using it or whether they've switched to something else by now. Yeah, so apart from these implementations that are just, you know, speaking the protocol, there are a couple of tools around. Specifically, what we have is a couple of DHT crawlers, some of them open source, some of them not. So the most famous one is ethernodes.org, which you can visit and check stats. And basically, so a DHT crawler explores the node discovery system to see which nodes are around, and then it lists those on a web page. And then finally, for networking nerds, this year, Consensus has released Wireshark dissectors for the protocols. And I'm actually really happy about that, because it means it's much easier now to debug issues with the protocol, because I can just load it up in Wireshark and see what is the node doing, and it labels all the packets that are being sent on the wire by name and things like that. So this is a really helpful thing. All right. Let's talk about the live network for a bit. So we're still alive, I guess. we have around 12,000 Ethereum mainnet nodes, just like last year. At least that's what Ethernode says. And the number of DHT participants is actually quite a bit higher, because when you look at Ethernodes, what you see on the front page is Ethereum mainnet nodes, which Ethernodes has decided that, you know, this node is part of the mainnet. But actually, in the discovery, you'll find a bunch more nodes that are doing all kinds of stuff. Like, there are other blockchains which have somehow imported DefP2P. There are Swarm nodes. There are all kinds of nodes listed there. So you can actually find a lot more nodes than just those. I forgot something. We haven't, in 2018, there haven't been any new attacks. So this is, I'm also happy about that. So in general, we're not seeing a lot of network level attacks. So most of the attacks on Ethereum have been on the consensus protocol level. But on the network level, we haven't actually seen any malicious activity, as far as we know, at least, in 2018. So there was not like a major network disruption. But What we did see was that there was a research paper was published in the beginning of the year by researchers at the University of Boston, where they explored the possibility of an eclipse attack on the Ethereum Discovery Network. But fortunately for us, this was disclosed responsibly through the bounty program, so they sent the paper to us a month in advance, and we could actually read it before it was published, and we could mitigate the issues. And I'll talk a bit about that later. So yeah, this is now the section where we talk about, you know, what happened in terms of development in 2018. So the first new thing is actually kind of old. So all the specs were rewritten, and if you read the old spec, it was just one document. Maybe you'll understand why. So it was really hard to read. It was incomplete at times. You couldn't really figure out what the semantics of the protocol were. Half of the document was stuff that never got implemented. It was just a big bunch of, I don't know, notes, basically. So yeah, I'm a bit proud to say that, you know, the specs are now much more readable, and they're up to date. And yeah, just in general, I've split up the specs into multiple parts, so I feel like it should all be a lot nicer now. And we have a test suite now. So this is something that I'm very excited about. Frank has joined the GoEthereum team very recently, and he has created a peer-to-peer networking test suite based on the Hive tool. So Hive is a tool that we use for testing the consensus between clients, and it's also also used for testing the RPC interface to the clients. So now we can test the peer-to-peer networking as well. And Geth, Parity, Aleph, and EthereumJ are hooked up to this test suite, and Trinity is being added. Well, it's, you know, been being added since a couple months now, so I think it's going to be done any second. But yeah, it will eventually also be there. And really, like, adding a client to Hive isn't all that hard. So it's I think this is a huge success. So in Geth, what's happened in Geth? So in the beginning of the year, we were really busy implementing the mitigation for the Eclipse attack. And basically, the way the attack works is that a node can be surrounded on the discovery level with attacker nodes, and it won't be able to find any kind of honest node, because all it will know about is like these attackers that were spawned specifically to bring this node down. And the way we approached the mitigation was to introduce IP limits on the connectivity, and so basically you have to have like a nice looking IP address to connect, yeah, something like that. And and we also we reworked how the discovery tables work so that the table can't be overrun by attackers so easily. And then later in the year, we've introduced support for ENR throughout the Go P2P code base. I'll have something about ENR later. If that doesn't mean anything to you, it's fine. And we've modularized the discovery code in general. So we're now ready to actually plug in different peer discovery mechanisms. And this is massively going to help with adoption of some of the new changes. But most of the changes to the P2P codebase haven't had any kind of immediate impact on the connectivity. So, you know, as a user of Geth, you're not going to like see, I don't know, any improvements, basically. It's mostly been prep work. And then, as Guillaume mentioned, we've done this experiment to run dev P2P applications on libP2P. So since he already talked about it so much, I'm just going to skip it now. So it was, I think the experiment was successful, and we have a pretty clear roadmap now of how to integrate libP2P into the whole dev P2P thing. Okay, so there are some ongoing changes to the low level protocols, so independent of any actual implementation, and So what I've done this year is to just, I've published three EIP drafts. The first one is EIP 778, that's Ethereum node records, and this is kind of at the heart of it. So Ethereum node records are a new concept. It's like a small document format with node metadata. It's a bit like business cards for nodes. And in those business cards, the nodes can declare transport capabilities and application capabilities and all these kinds of things, and then they can be relayed through some medium. And then up next, we have this EIP 868, which is a tiny specification that integrates node records into the existing discovery protocol. So this one's really short. And then finally, we have something new, which is the last item. And that one is an entirely new mechanism for discovering nodes based on DNS. So it basically allows you to find node records behind a certain DNS name, and it's totally independent of the distributed hash table. So yeah, ENR. So what's that about? When people look at the ENR specification, they can sometimes, well, they come back to me and they say, well, what can I use this for? I mean, this is like, you know, there are almost no details in the EIP about, you know, potential uses. And it's a document format. I mean, how does that relate to the grand scheme of things? So the thing about ENR is that it's more like it's like a medium for negotiating all kinds of capabilities that nodes have, and it can be a bit hard to imagine like which capabilities are actually worth negotiating between nodes. So I'll just have a couple examples for you guys now. So one of the things that makes me excited about ENR is that it gives us the option to switch to a zero round trip encryption scheme. So if two nodes learn about each other in some discovery system, what the discovery system can do for them is it can relay key material, which can be used to pre-compute secrets for a connection. And this is actually really nice because it means that as soon as a connection between those two nodes is created, the nodes can start sending data that's relevant to the application pretty much within the first byte, because most of the secrets that are needed to encrypt their communication are already pre-computed before the connection was even created. And so I feel like this is a pretty useful feature, but what we need for that obviously is a way to like relay this initial key material, and this is where ENR can help. The second thing is transport options. So this is something that also makes sense to negotiate upfront, because like Guillaume told you, we have this ambitious plan to use some of the libP2P transport offerings in our dev P2P stack. But in order to make this work, well, if you have a node that speaks libP2P and you have another that wants to talk to it, that other node needs to know whether libP2P is supported. And this isn't really something you can just sort of try. I mean, you can poke the node and then see, well, it's not responding, but that just takes super long. And the right solution here is to just know that this node is capable of speaking libP2P. And for these kinds of things, it's obviously very useful if the node can declare upfront in some kind of system that it's compatible with whatever transport you want to speak. And then finally, there's another thing, which is negotiating prices. So what kind of prices? Well, so in systems like the Ethereum Light Client or Swarm, you have something called an incentive system. So in an incentive system on the network level, there are clients and there are servers, and the clients pay the servers for whatever bandwidth they're using. And that bandwidth comes at a certain price. And if you have an incentive system set up, then there's a market for servers, obviously, because some servers are gonna have one price and other servers gonna offer another price. And as a client, you want to connect to servers that are sort of like in your price range, right? I mean, you don't have an infinite budget. You you need a server that gives you like the most, how do you say, bang for the buck, I guess. And so to make this work, if you can already know upfront that a certain server for, say, Swarm can offer you data at a certain price, that can influence your connectivity decisions as a client. So you're obviously going to prefer the servers that are, you know, match your price expectations, right? And let's just go and look a bit at how the DNS discovery works, because this is like the new thing. So the DNS discovery EAP is a bit different from the others because it doesn't talk about improving any existing protocol. It's a totally new protocol. And we've come up with this scheme because we want a replacement for Bootstrap node lists. So in most clients, what you'll find is there's a hard-coded list of Bootstrap nodes. Usually it's not that long. And these nodes are the initial entry point into the network. So when you want to talk to the Ethereum blockchain, you've got to start somewhere. So you've got to find someone who's on that blockchain, more or less. Talk to them first and then find all the others who are also, you know, into this thing. And maintaining these lists is, you know, annoying, because if we want to add a node to it, then we can just put it in the source code. People can download a new release of the client, and then they'll have it. But we'd much rather have a list that's dynamic, that can be updated on the fly, and a list that's like very, very long, right? So we, you know, for initial entry points, you'd better give people some options. So what we envision for DNS discovery is a system that can dynamically, with the help of the distributed hash table, create a massive list of nodes that have a certain uptime and that have certain capabilities, like let's say like a big list of mainnet nodes. Well, then we compile them into a certain format and publish that at some DNS provider. And then clients would be able to find them there. And that's DNS discovery for you. Oh, right, and there's one more feature. So the thing is, the system also includes it's a bit like a web of trust. So one node list can actually refer to another node list using the DNS name of the list and the public key. And this means that, well, certain lists can sort of authorize each other, and we can group them into meta lists and things like that. Right. So, the EAPs, so Ethereum Node Records is implemented in Go, Python, and JavaScript so far. The extension is implemented in Go, but isn't merged in the master branch. And node discovery via DNS is implemented in Go and Python, but the deployer tool that moves it to a DNS provider isn't really done yet. Right, and now I just have two more minutes, I guess. More or less, it says two there, so I look at this clock. And so I'll just talk about a bit about what's next. So we have an ongoing discussion with the sharding team, the Ethereum research team, about how we can join the efforts, because the Ethereum sharding right now, the networking is based on libP2P. So I feel this is a good decision with libP2P because it gives them a lot of options to try out. But obviously, like, I myself want to like feed my improvements that I'm working on, you know, on the Ethereum Foundation payroll. I want to, you know, feed those improvements into the sharding. So I feel like the things that we're doing here to improve DevP2P, these things can actually benefit sharding in the long run. But right now there isn't much overlap. But like I said, we have an ongoing discussion. And then the biggest challenge that sharding faces is just that they need a system where peers can be switched really quickly, and we're trying to make that work. Right, I'm gonna skip this part, and I'm gonna just quickly say, before I have to go, that there's a big plan for 2019 to offer DevP2P as a WebAssembly module, so that you guys, if you ever want to use DevP2P, you don't have to use Go or like another good implementation, but probably that's gonna be Go, because it's the best, yeah. But yeah, so this is a plan that we have, and thanks.